Lincoln Inspired is more than just an arts festival, more than a literary festival, more than a whole set of lifestyle opportunities, and more than what the world has needed for millennia.
To see just how much more Lincoln Inspired can make you, go to lincolninspired.co.uk and explore the inspiration.
Absolutely, and having just had the Lincoln Inspired quiz, the traditional curtain raiser to the whole sequence, of course, that's what happened on the birthday of Shakespeare and a whole range of other things. Of course, a sensational day. We now actually turn on the Thursday morning, of course, Midweek Drive morning edition to a gentleman who is just always on the case, on the ball, and if he'd been able to actually make the Lincoln Inspired Festival this year, it would have just been that extra special, sort of more aspects of wonderfulness there. Not that we've not got lots of things happening between the 6th of May and, of course, the 12th of May, but it's always good, Richard Fitzwilliams, to say one day we'll get you up to Lincoln.
Yes, it will happen. It was no fault of mine or indeed yours. What happened happened last time.
Well, this is it. And also, I must admit, looking at ahead to challenges with respect to transport, it would seem that one of our trips down to the Sci-Fi London Film Fest, of course, might be kazoomed by the proposed underground strike, because much as you might say, well, there are other forms of transport available, it's so darn useful to be able to sort of get around the capital using that underground system.
The system works on the whole extremely well, but this is not something that I am looking forward to. I can get round it, and I think that it would make travel very unpleasant at certain hours, and some lines, most lines, may very well be up.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, one used to use the number 37 bus to actually take the journey from Clapham Junction right the way through to Dulwich in days gone by. And there are lots of other sort of overland services available. But ultimately, I feel, and this is where it all turns around to the magical link today, that you really need to have a spider web to actually swing from skyscraper to skyscraper, and then we'll be sorted. See what
That's
we did there, Richard.
And you see, you've got there before me.
Exactly.
I was wondering where we were heading. Yeah. If we could levitate.
Yeah, well, this is true. Just as a general, or maybe use the powers of electromagnetism in an electro sense to actually just sort of float our way through that. Mind you, there is a line that says thinking is the best way to travel. So this particular broadcast is being brought to you from Richard Fitzwilliams in the Bahamas and Alex Levchuk in the Canary Islands.
That's another thought. Indeed it is. Indeed it is. But if you can levitate, and you levitate for the force of good, you drive evil from the streets, in this case, of course, New York. If you can spread your web, quite literally a villain will be trapped within it. Then you have the amazing Spider-Man 2, and you have Andrew Garfield as,
Peter Parker.
Tobey Maguire, of course.
Or Nicholas Hammond in the TV series, and of course Nicholas Hammond had cut his teeth on The Sound of Music, so let's not forget Nicholas Hammond.
Yes, it's one of these franchises that has legions of fans, and they love the action sequences, and in this particular case I'm very glad to say that we can welcome Emma Stone. She's Gwen Stacy. She's graduating from high school. She's looking perhaps even to come to England. And, of course, we have Peter Parker, a.k.a. Spider-Man, deeply in love with her. This, actually, is what really saves this picture. In fact, Emma Stone is not only drop-dead gorgeous, but she's extremely good and very touching. There's chemistry between the two of them that is so often lacking in blockbuster movies, and she gives a marvelous performance.
And of course, if you're a real aficionado, you will appreciate that there is a tragedy in the comic book scenario.
I know you're pre-recording.
I know, it's okay. Well, I'm just saying there is a tragedy.
We can't. I have to, from conscience, I have to.
All right, I'll just leave it there. I'll just say there is a tragedy. I shall say no more. That's the bottom line. Well, last week, obviously, we were talking and eulogizing, and I must admit, I have thought so far, and I haven't seen Amazing Spider-Man 2, but I did think Captain America Winter Soldier really ticked all the correct boxes. Obviously, this is It's a Marvel creation. It's from a different, obviously, producer and connections from the Sony studios as opposed to the Marvel studios, etc. So it's interesting. Does it cut the mustard? Does it actually cut the spider web? Or are people still left with that sense of saying, well, why did they actually reboot it? Although it is quite fun having a director called Mark Webb directing Spider-Man.
Oh, you're getting there first, you see. I mean, this is the thing, preempting me.
No.
Mark Webb has got it right when it comes to the romance. When he gets it wrong, that's when it comes to some of these villains. Now, there is no doubt that the character played by Jamie Foxx, a character indeed, who is called Max and who's helped by Spider-Man when he's having a bit of trouble carrying stuff in the street. Well, he's also linked with the Oscorp company. This is causing a lot of trouble, potentially. And indeed, he falls into a tank of eels, which cause him to mutate their electric. And he becomes a living electric generator. And he grows in size. Now, one of the problems with this, I'm a great admirer of Jamie Foxx when he plays Ray, but we've also got Paul Giamatti as Rhino, a villain so ridiculous that I won't even attempt to describe the suit of armor he wears. And we've got Dan DeHaan as Harry, and he has a pivotal role as the head of Oscorp, succeeding his father, who's played by Chris Cooper, who we briefly see. The problem with having silly villains with ever more bizarre and strange suits of armor, electro fields and all the rest of it, I mean, it means that you've got battles with Spider-Man and that's what the fans want to go and see. But the problem is it takes what is far from reality into, well, I can only say, different levels of silliness quite often. Because a villain simply becomes something that is patently and totally ridiculous. Equally, if you go with it, it's extremely colorful. You've got the amazing special effects. You've got the swoops and levitations and fights above New York City. And you've got Times Square, which, poor thing, when I last was there, it looked comparatively colorful and lively, but when it comes to Spider-Man and battles, they seem to be set in that area, and very frequently you actually see all the lights go out of New York itself. This when Spider-Man is considering a future with his love, who's been... Who hopes to go to Oxford?
Well, don't talk about. There could be a. Does Stanley make his traditional cameo appearance?
Stanley, I'm not familiar enough with the series.
Oh dear, he is the creator of everything. Stanley, a Marvel Comics movie without Stanley, it's just ridiculous. So he always has a like Hitchcock in many ways. And I just, you know, to me, it only has that Marvel seal of approval if you've actually got a cameo by the mustachioed nonagenarian now. I think he's just heading out of his octogenarian years. But I was just wondering whether Stanley is actually in there. Of course, you may recall from The Amazing Spider-Man, the reboot, he was actually in the library, I believe, when the thing took place, but it's always nice to actually spot Stanley. Clearly, you haven't added that to your oeuvre as yet, Richard, but never
that
mind.
That is absolutely the case. You spread it around, and you don't necessarily get to know them as a fan would, but I think, I mean, there's no doubt that that sort of touch, which the Hitchcock style touch, it's very important for the fans.
It's the reason I go there, to actually just check out the Stanley performance and the line that's actually within that whole field. He's appeared...
If one breaks the movie down, and you're someone who's followed the genre and you love this sort of thing, you will get kicks from most of it, and you will find much of it extremely entertaining, and which bit plays homage to what, and who mutates into which, and who you can spot in cameo roles. It's part, so to speak, of the fun of a series like this. I do have to say that it's not something that I've given a great deal of study to, and I do wish they would just make the villains a little more realistic, but then you can hardly say that Spider-Man is the sort of person that we see levitating over London all the time.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's just because, obviously, you know, London has had its own hero with Captain Britain, of course, and that's a whole new world there. Brian Braddock, who took on board the persona. Anyway, before we actually go into Geek Heaven and actually start talking about sci-fi London in full force, I asked the question, Winter Soldier or Spider-Man, which one would you say actually works for yourself?
Oh, definitely Winter Soldier. In fact, very, very considerably, and by a large margin. But there is Emma Stone, and you see, I'd want to see her.
Yeah, but Scarlett Johansson is in Winter Soldier, so, you know, Scarlett Johansson
is extremely active in Winter
exactly,
Soldier.
Exactly, exactly so.
Yes, indeed, so you really got...
And in fact, she gets her own Black Widow movie coming up very shortly as well in the next year or so, so, you know, good news there. So,
good news, yes. And good news to see Scarlett Johansson, especially when she's not got... or playing an alien. That was
I can see that Under the Skin has really got under your skin.
It got under my skin. Because I didn't know it before I saw the film, and I therefore didn't appreciate it, and I was therefore hoisted by my own petard.
It's another potential tragedy that could actually occur when you're least expecting it, but there we are. It's an iconic moment of the series. Anyway, moving on. It's one of the reasons why people said, why not just use Mary Jane Watson as opposed to Gwen Stacy? But never mind. Moving on to The Pioneers, another pioneering setup from that point of view. Or it's not The Pioneers, of course, is it just Pioneer?
Yes, it's a Norwegian drama, and I chose this because I thought it might be interesting. It's quite extraordinary, the fascination with Scandinavian movies, especially when there's a lot of skullduggery around, and usually, of course, they are thrillers. But this is one which is set in a rather curious, very, very curiously, in the North Sea. It's in the 1970s, and Norway is starting to... exploit its oil resources, and you have the Norwegian government competing with the Americans for a contract to lay the pipeline and to get the maximum benefit out of them. And we have Petter, played by Axel Hennie. Remember Headhunters? It was certainly a movie that you wouldn't forget if you'd seen it. He and his brother go deep, very deep. Deeper than anyone has previously gone. Then there's a ghastly accident, and when Petter tries to discover what caused it, he discovers a cover-up at all levels, and there seem to be so many people who are in on trying to prevent the truth from coming out. Director Erik Skjoldberg, would it be a name to conjure with on the basis of this film? I have to say that the underwater scenes are extremely exciting. I mean, there is drama there, as more or less inevitably there would be. It's when it's on dry land that the movie hits certain problems, because there are so many villains, and though there's the claustrophobia when you're in diving suits and trying to explore how deep you can go, and that's rather obvious, and the acting is relatively reasonable, I thought, most of the parts, it dissipates the tension when matters appear rather contrived. So it's okay underwater, which is much of the first part of the sequel of the film, but it's subsequently, it doesn't pick up, it isn't or hasn't got the hard edge. It doesn't keep you on the edge of your seat. And on the contrary, I found some of the characters, the way it's written, rather unconvincing. It has to be said, however, George Clooney's production company apparently have snapped up the rights for an American remake, so when we see Hollywood's taken it, hopefully it will be more dramatic. It is actually quite good. And I was amused on the net, someone has called Axel Hennie the Steve McQueen of the Fjords. Whether he gets an international audience, I don't know. Headhunter certainly was pretty unforgettable. But a movie that I had very mixed feelings about. Certainly it's not one that I'd advise people especially to go out and see, but it's an unusual movie.
Richard, makes perfect sense. Still to come, we're going to have a mini outdoor location report, actually, when I trotted up to Bale Gates to actually speak to the fabulous proprietors of a new independent bookshop. Yes, I'll say that again, a new independent bookshop called Lindum Books, which is a sensation. It's always good, Richard, I feel, to actually have new independent bookstores opening their routines.
I agree.
Yes,
Yes, totally.
We celebrate that, and we'll find out about Linden Books and a whole heap of other things as well. We'll also be speaking to BAFTA award-winning director Graham Harper about his time currently doing Casualty, Holby City, Casualty, and so on. And we'll probably squeeze in a little touch of Rachel Warren as well. All this and more on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, the show after, or the show on the morning after, the Lincoln-inspired quiz that's coming through. Richard, would you like to give me a page number between 1 and 23, please?
I'd choose 16.
16. That would bring us to Saturday the 10th of May. And then, if you're part of the Lincoln-inspired scenario, you could choose from Inspirational Choirs, which is a free event outside the Lincoln Performing Arts Centre, with school and community choirs from Lincoln and beyond featuring in special performances just outside the Zing Cafe Bar. You've got A Writer's Surgery with literary agent John Gerald, who's actually going to be talking about that. It's John Gerald, etc. And an Urban Fringe Herb Walk. An Urban Fringe Herb Walk with medical herbalist Hannah Sylvester, as well as How to Get Your Teen Novel Published. Is that not a treat beyond treats for the Festival of Literature, Performance and Art at the Lincoln-inspired event, Richard?
My goodness, it is, and my goodness me, what a trailer.
Exactly, this is it. Richard Fitzwilliams, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us?
I have indeed.
Will you return again in the usual slot, our Thursday Midweek Drive Morning Edition, for the first Midweek Drive Morning Edition, in fact, of May 2014?
I'm most certainly look forward to doing so.
Hi, this is Rosie Langhorne, and you're listening to Alex Lefchuk and the team on the Midweek Drive.
Well, it's a sort of team where I'm sort of putting the whole package together, like a wonderful sort of package of post-April 23rdness on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition for Thursday, April 24th. We're speaking now, of course, to, yes, it's inevitable that she's become part of the team. She's there. We've already got the Warrenettes, as they call themselves, gradually building up a head of steam internationally, as we say. Rachel Warren, yay, back with the show.
Good morning.
Not in the studio, but then, you know, life continues and you're in Bury St Edmunds, and we couldn't do a show without you, Rachel, so there we are, here we are, and connected.
Aww.
Together. Yeah, exactly. Now, Richard Fitzwilliams has just been chuntering away quite merrily, as is his wont, about the amazing Spider-Man 2. I think it's fair to say, without giving too many spoilers away, it wasn't a huge, I mean, he enjoyed it for what it was, etc. Is it a sort of movie you're likely to be going to see? What's the situation?
I don't know. I'm now home. My little brother, he's mm-hmm. going on about it, and apparently yes. It's amazing. He's right. 18, but he's very, very excited by it. And he went to see Captain America the other day, and apparently it's amazing, and I absolutely have to see it.
Yeah, well, I mean, as you know, I have regularly sort of eulogised about Captain America the Winter Soldier. Spider-Man I haven't actually seen as yet, but I just thought we'd throw that one in there. Anyway, moving on, Lincoln Inspired, of course, about to officially launch, of course, next week, May the 1st, Inspired On Air, when Rachel, you'll be with Ed Wellman and myself and other guests from the whole package, 10 a.m. through to 11 a.m. on the 1st of May, and then 11 a.m. through to 12 noon on the 2nd of May. What are you looking forward to with respect to Lincoln Inspired yourself?
I'm just looking forward to seeing some different things, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I thought you might have said, looking forward to finally meeting William Sitwell in person, with food. Yeah. 4,000 years in 2,000 seconds. There's tremendous stuff there, as we said with our recent report up at Linden Books. You could actually see William's book in there, A History of Food in 100 Recipes, which is wonderful stuff from there. Give me a random number, Rachel, between 4 and 19, please.
8.
Number 8, okay. Well, if we went to 8, we'd go straight in the festival brochure to Wednesday the 7th of May, and the delights that you could actually choose from that point of view, you can actually talk about the Infinite Playlist at the Lincoln Drill Hall at 8 p.m, two hand-picked acts showcasing their originality, performance and amazingly fresh skills, an opportunity to see the best of unsung and unsigned, and also supporting local musicians. You've got A Dare to Dance, coffee shop culture at 7 p.m. at the Lincoln Drill Hall. A Dare to Dance, in a very unusual coffee shop in which you can follow the characters throughout their day. It's full of innovative choreography plus projects created by digital artists Illuminos. You could also
see,
it's supported by the Arts Council, and it's also featuring local young dancers taking on the parts of the Coffee Frantics too. The Coffee Frantics. And also at the same day, 4 to 5pm at the Newton Centre in the Priory Academy, you've got the opportunity to meet up with Linda Bennett, self-published director Linda Bennett, and she's also known as the crime writer Christina James, of course. She's guiding aspiring authors through the minefield of dealing with publishers and agents, the dilemma of going it alone with self-publishing, and offering advice on sharpening your writing skills. So a whole range of things there, and Linda's books, of course, will be available for sale and signing, and it's part of the Priory Literary Festival, the Priory LSST Literary Festival. And that's just a random routine. And then, of course, on the morning after, literally a fortnight from this very show, Rachel, it's the big BG breakfast tweet-up. Not 1 hour, not 2 hours, but 3 hours of yourself and myself at the Lincolnshire Showground, Ed Wellman in the studio, Graham King, I believe, from Lincoln City Radio, that other radio station in Lincoln, one of the other radio stations in Lincoln, is going to be joining us. We'll be connected with Amelia Highfield from the Lincolnshire Showground, Inspired Schools patron Georgia Twynham, Nick Roberts from Bishop Grosseteste University, Students' Union, and they'll be talking about the hidden gems they find so inspirational in Lincoln, and heaps more. So that's at the Epic Centre and the Lincolnshire Showgrounds, the big Bishop Grosseteste breakfast tweet-up, or the big BG breakfast tweet-up, with, of course, Siren FM present there as well. So that's exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, that's very exciting.
Yeah, it's extraordinarily exciting. But, I mean, if we add to that, on the 4th of May, we have Sci-Fido, the next sort of trek down to our London experience, where we might also connect with Richard Fitzwilliams again, but we'll just have to wait and see on that one. All being well, the 4th of May we'll see at the Stratford, the last day of the Sci-Fi London Film Festival. Exciting things there. So lots of things to really make your last few weeks as an undergraduate at the University of Lincoln highly memorable, I think, Rachel.
Yes, oh, so sad that it's the end, but yes, well, it will. It's very exciting.
Don't think of it as the end, think of it as a new beginning. You see, it's the whole range of things.
Think it as
being the Bury St. Edmunds correspondent we've waited, you know, 20 odd years to actually sort of finally sort of connect with. You know, it's there, it's nailed in, shoe in.
Yeah.
So, moving on from that perspective, Lincoln Inspired, I mean, does Bury have festivals in itself, or do you think we should actually set up a Bury St. Edmunds Arts Festival too?
We don't have any arts festivals. Mm-hmm. Maybe we could do with one. There's all sorts of things. They've got a beer festival next weekend.
Yes.
They've got, they often have little things, but we don't have any, like, arty big festivals, I don't think. Well, they're like street festivals.
Maybe through your good self and Sarah Bullimore, etc., we could actually offer the branding of the Lincoln Inspired to become, you know, in 2015, we could look at Bury St. Edmunds Inspired. So just returning to those, obviously you're an English undergraduate at present, soon to be English graduate. You worked through a whole range of other bits and pieces. Reflecting on your whole experience at Lincoln, has it been enjoyable? Has it been positive? We can always edit this out if it's the wrong answer, but, you know, carry on. What sort of lines would you say? What have your memories been of your time spent at Lincoln?
It's a very positive experience. I've enjoyed it. Memories of it. The first term, I wasn't too sure about it because it's all a bit new and scary wasn't sure if I liked it or not.
Yes.
But I've got the memories I'll remember lots of things that, like, with my housemates and moving into a student house as opposed to student accommodation and things like that and all the friends I've made and... Yes.
There we are, you
see. All very, very positive.
Precisely so. Don't forget, you can actually go to the web lincolninspired.co.uk and pick up your own sort of range of information for Lincoln Inspired, Festival of Literature, Performance and Art. The independent bookstore that we mentioned several times at the end of Richard Fitzwilliam's piece, I'll mention it again because we're focusing a short mini location report with Linden Books, which is just up at Balegate. A wonderful little place. I'm sure we actually should do a show from there in the not-too-distant future. As well. But now it's time for me to ask you those last two questions, Rachel Warren. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition today?
I have, yes, thank you.
Good. This is positive stuff. You know, it's nice to tick on that sort of box there. So the next critical question is, we've kind of already answered this, but will you return and come back and join us again in the very near future?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, try, see? Yes. Now the deal's come through. I don't know. It's Lincoln Inspired sorting its way through. Essential to actually work through that. Rachel, it's been... I think it's been your first ever phone link for us, hasn't it? There we are. First one in the can. I'm sure many more to come, but we'll see you in the studio before too long. Rachel Warren, we salute you.
Hi, this is Jean Bruce Scott.
And Randy Reinholz.
And when we're not busily producing some of the most outstanding Native American theater in Los Angeles,
we always like to check out the best of British audio adventures with Alex Lefchuk and his team of the Midweek Drive.
And Midweek Drive morning editions on Siren FM.
And Southside Broadcasting. Podbean.com.
Quite right, too. You can get all the other goodies on website as well and podcasts and probably just play them as often as you wish. Anyway, we talk about the team. This morning, obviously, it's been the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, and we've focused, obviously, on Richard Fitzwilliams. We've had the joys of Rachel Warren. Also gone up the hill to visit Linden Books and have been clearly looking ahead to Lincoln Inspired. We had the quiz last night, of course, the Lincoln Inspired official quiz at the collection. Fabulous sort of experience it was. Indeed, and now, as promised, we can welcome back, after far too long a gap to the Midweek Drive airwaves and such like, for Siren and beyond, the one and only legendary soul that is Graham Harper. How are you, Graham?
Hi, I'm very, very well, thank you very much.
Brilliant stuff. So, I mean, tragically, it's now getting too long since you were last in Lincoln, because it's about a year ago, of course, you were actually at the first ever Lincoln-inspired event, where you were sharing the panel with Terence Dix and Richard Franklin and myself about... the joys of Doctor Who and so on. And of course, this year round, well, we are in the second Lincoln Inspired Festival, and it just gets better and better.
Excellent. Oh, I'm really pleased. I'm pleased it's going again.
Well, indeed, and we'll continue to do so. I mean, we're welcoming Irving Finkel. We haven't mentioned Irving before, but Irving actually wrote The Ark Before Noah, and it's very much tying in with this obsession we've actually had with The Ark, but he'll be sharing his thoughts on that on Saturday the 10th of May, and we'll be sort of discussing a whole range of things about life, the universe and various other factors as well. British Museum expert Irving Finkel talking about the book, which reveals how the detective work involved in decoding symbols on a 4,000-year-old clay tablet led to a radical new interpretation of the Noah's Ark myth. Yeah.
Wow.
In fact, Channel 4 are making a film about the tablet and are currently rebuilding the Ark following the instructions on it. So I don't know, that could be an interesting line. Maybe you should all build one. But perhaps that's not the point. We've also got the Time Machine, also on Saturday the 10th of May, 7:30 p.m. We are also focusing on this. In 1895, is in a garden, a man lies dazed beside a remarkable machine. It's a Nunke's production of H.G. Wells' science fiction classic, a thrilling one-man show at the Lincoln Drill Hall on the Time Machine. So it's just a little teaser there to some of the things that we're actually doing. But meanwhile, you've been busily involved with Casualty. And how's it going?
I've just finished a block. So I'm editing at the moment, and I've got one more week of editing, and then I'm finished with Casualty for a bit. But yes, no, it's really good. I really enjoy doing them.
And do you turn the corner then and go on to Holby City or change the city?
I've actually been doing for the last 2 years Holby City and Casualty.
Exactly.
I don't know if I'm going back there. I wait to see whether I'll be asked, but everyone seems to be quite pleased with what I've done, so that's good.
I mean, the only minor gripe that I actually have these days of iPlayers and digital DVDs, etc., I do think it's a pity that other than obviously iPlayer and catch up and so on, we haven't quite got the kind of same level of DVD sales and such like for SF material, etc., to actually really sort of see some of the extra work you've been doing, because frequently I'll look at the schedule and think, oh, Graham directed that, oh, I missed it, oh, never mind. Do you think there's a market for sort of releasing best of Casualty compilations and Holby City and so on?
I don't know how you know what is the best, to be honest.
That's true, yeah.
The reason being, there are so many of them, and I think each week they seem to, you know, when I pick up, when I'm going to do them, obviously I start watching again to catch up, see where we all are, although they're about 3 months in advance. So, you know, what you're seeing now and what you're making now 3 months later. So, at least I think it's about 3 months. So, things can change drastically in that time. I mean, you can't read all the scripts, you know, leading up to yours. You just don't have the time. So
I'm just thinking that, yeah, obviously the Americans will release box sets of ER, St. Elsewhere, Grey's Anatomy, other various medical stuff. We haven't really got that in this country, yet I would have thought surely with both Holby City and Casualty, you've got ready-made markets to actually start releasing packages. Or is it a case of the kind of ongoing soap operas rather than TV drama?
So there's no real conclusion per episode to maybe three strands of stories involving the principals. You know, it's each week different principal actors in the series, who, you know, the regular stars, get their moments, as it were. Not all the time. Sometimes they are added to scenes, a part of scenes, because they would be there and they have some vested interest in the case that's being dealt with. Not necessarily their storyline, if you see what I mean. So there are all those storylines going on, and they never really get concluded until, you know, maybe they run for a year, as it were. So I think it's very hard to say what's the best of, because maybe it's all the conclusions. Well, I don't know how you work it out.
Well, I'm sure where there's a will, there's a way.
I think it's also to do with how many they think they would sell based on the fact they probably have tried it.
Well, that's an interesting, because I can't recall offhand any sort of DVD packages of either of those two series.
No, I think you're probably right, but they know how to they know what they want to make money on. So you know, what my gripe with the BBC, and listen, what do I know about the inner goings on and the mechanism for the way the money is dealt with? But all the money, for example, that Doctor Who makes, which must be enormous now. That must be a huge revenue coming in yearly, you know, from sales and showings all over the world, etc. I don't believe there's any way any of that profit goes back into Doctor Who. It goes back into the BBC, maybe, or maybe it just runs that department and makes all the sales. I don't know. But you never see, they've never, ever put money back into the show itself. In the old days, being the 80s of Doctor Who, I remember that Enterprises, which is now worldwide, but Enterprises, who are the sales body, would, if Doctor Who couldn't afford two extra Daleks for an episode, or a block, then they could be approached and they would probably fund the making of those two. But that's a small amount of money compared to the overall cost of the program. And rather than say, let's make it take cuts every year, because I believe Doctor Who's now being cut down financially year after year. Rather than do that, they should be investing their money, making it better and better and better. But we don't do that. The Americans do, but we don't.
Do you think conceivably we're having a kind of revisitation of the 80s in terms of the history of Doctor Who, whereby you actually have a big anniversary of the 80s, obviously the 25th, and this recent year we've had the 50th anniversary, and then a new Doctor, played by a Scottish person, obviously Sylvester McCoy in the 80s, now of course Malcolm Tucker exponent extraordinaire, in terms of, obviously, who is the new Doctor? Let me rewrite.
Peter Capaldi.
Peter Capaldi, who of course played Malcolm Tucker. And do you think it's gradually going to sort of take another fallow period, or is that just a case of no nonsense?
If they start the old thing of cutting down, as they do, or every year repeat series get a cut in their costs, as it were, in their budget. And it's time they stop doing that. If you've got a winning formula that's brilliant, that's loved, don't reduce it. Add to it. Keep it going to make money. Or take it to a level where you think it's brilliant and then cut it. Don't do it anymore. You know, leave on a high. But to reduce, Doctor Who lost its way because it lost money year after year in the 80s, 70s and 80s, but particularly in the 80s. And that was John Nathan Turner's biggest, hugest problem. To me, he was not a fool guy, but, you know, I don't think anybody else really wanted to take it on, to be honest. I think he was happy to continue and try and do his best, you know, year after year. He did it for 10 years. I mean, that's too long for any producer on such a series, because it will eventually drain you. It has to. But he did, and, you know, with the cost being dropped all the time, I found it very hard for him to make it as exciting as he really did. And I think he didn't have lots of failure. I mean, he kept this show going, you know, right to the bitter end. It's just that he had to suffer huge cuts in cost. I've stopped.
Well, at least we didn't go on to finger puppets, but that's another one.
I'll bet that was coming.
It would have been a possibility. Those drastics, just wave the thing around. It's interesting, we move obviously from medical dramas, doctors there, to Time Lord dramas and doctors there. Let's shift slightly, because I know that you're a keen Arsenal supporter, keen fan from that perspective. Do you feel it's the traditional Arsenal spring collapse, or do you think it's going to be success and happiness against Hull City in the FA Cup final?
Because they've got there means that they are not a walkover. That will not be a walkover. But I'm keeping my fingers crossed. I think Arsenal are absolutely excellent, but not consistent. That's their problem. And I don't understand that, because the one consistent thing they've got is the manager, who I think is brilliant. And I'm really pleased Arsenal stuck with him, because he hasn't really had any big successes, certainly in collecting any awards. This year could be the year for us, and I think, I'm hoping that we'll just be that much better than Hull and cleverer. We've got some fantastic players, but they have achieved the FA Cup. I mean, that's
first time since the 1930s, of course, when they got to the FA Cup semi-final and lost to Arsenal. Ironic, really.
Oh, dear, oh dear.
But never mind. Of course, they might have thought Arsenal that Wigan were also going to be a walkover. Didn't quite prove to be the case.
Not at all.
Yeah. And don't start talking about Everton, otherwise who knows what could actually happen with the fourth Champions League.
Why, is that your team?
No, yes, you know I'm I've always been a Manchester City supporter. It's all very important, which is dreadful in terms of Sunderland and all the rest of the bits and bobs. But never mind, life continues. Moving on, in terms of the sequence, it's going to be a random page number, Graham, between 2 and 19.
Oh, I'm going to be really unusual, 17.
Yeah, very good, it's all good, the last sort of sequence that we actually have on the show today. And 17, we've kind of already touched upon some of the things that are happening on the Lincoln-inspired day, because this is from the Lincoln-inspired brochure, always available, but you can also go to the online lincolninspired.co.uk. And as well as Irving Finkel, who we spoke about, and The Time Machine, we've also got award winner Matt Haig, whose novel The Humans is one of 20 featured titles for this year's World Book Night. Matt writes novels for adults and children, including the bestsellers The Last Family in England, which has actually had the film rights purchased by a certain Brad Pitt. I think he's some sort of film star, basically. The Radleys. Children's books have won Blue Peter Book of the Year and the Gold Smarties Award, and he'll be in conversation with our very own Jill Hart, who in fact was featured on this show where we actually went up the hill to see Linden Books. So that's Matt Haig, author and children's writer, and adult author as well, who'll be in the Lincoln Drill Hall at the Room Upstairs, 4 p.m. on Saturday the 10th of May. That's wonderful. Graham, I feel as though we've actually just fitted in the thing just perfectly. It's been a seamless sort of piece into the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
It's been very, very nice, Alexis. I'm going to call you Adrian, then.
Yeah, well, there is an Adrian, who we both know,
Yes. Who
might have actually come back onto the show had he actually provided a fairly crucial thing when we talk about when we start talking about phone links, and that is actually a telephone number to reach him on. Now, obviously, there's a challenge on that basis, but we can't work on a telepathic basis, and there's only so much we can actually do via Facebook, but that's by the by. Suffice it to say, there is a little grat, because I can appreciate that if you have your mobile phone, you don't want all these unwanted text messages. You know, I'm being flooded with text messages these days, and you just think, I'll just stop. And then if you say text stop, it's then going to cost you to actually send the text. You just say stop. It's bizarre. But that's another issue for another time. I take it then you'll return and be back with us in the very near future?
I'm looking forward to it immediately.
The Midweek Drive Team.